They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew.
Radio Fairfax, I'm really happy to have Ward Lucas with me today. Ward, thank you so much for joining us.
You're certainly welcome, Shu. I love talking to you. You know that.
I love talking to you, too, and it's been such a long time since you've been on. So welcome back to
On the
Commons, and thank you so much for taking time out. I know you're a busy man.
Never too busy for you, and you know that.
Well, I appreciate that. So Neighbors at War is the book that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a blog by the same name, Neighbors at War.
Neighborsatwar.com. And we're actually doing pretty well on the blog. I'm averaging around 600,000 visits a year on an annualized basis to Neighbors at War. A lot of these are repeat visits, and people read an average of 4 pages on the blog at each one of their visits. So there's a lot of information getting out there. Of course, I'm a little bit frivolous at times on the blog. I keep it short. I sometimes try to keep it funny. And, of course, I solicit and covet guest blogs from anybody who wants to write them. We just do a very careful job of editing and making sure there's no libel and slander. But it's better to get a whole bunch of opinions than just hearing from me all the time.
Well, maybe you'll get a guest blog from me.
Oh, fantastic. I'd love it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll censor you. Shoot, you might.
You can censor me. I'm going to tell you about my new website.
Oh, please do.
And why we've started it. So
okay.
I will do a guest blog and send that to you, and hopefully we'll get a lot of comments from people.
Great.
On that.
Great.
I was going through some of your comments and some of your blogs, and one of the things that you do is you put in there the amount of time, the estimated time it's going to take people to read your post.
That's right.
And I know you have told me a number of times that it's got to be short.
Well, keep in mind that I've spent 4 decades in the television business, and actually 7 years before that in the radio business. And there was a TV consultant, the guy who invented eyewitness news, which you hear all over the country. Every city has an eyewitness news station. His name was Frank Magid, and he did a tremendous amount of research and psychology investigations and attention span investigations. And what he discovered was that the attention span, and this goes back to my years at Cairo TV back in the 1970s, they were the first eyewitness news station in Seattle. But he did a tremendous amount of research in attention spans. And what he learned and what he taught each one of the eyewitness news stations is that the average attention span of a television news viewer was 2 minutes. That's it, 2 minutes. Over the years, he began revising that, and it went down to 1 minute and 30 seconds. And about 10, 15 years later, it was 1 minute, 15 seconds. Now, the tragedy is that he was able to prove this by setting up cameras back in the time when the so-called people meters came out, where they tracked not only what TV station you were watching. I mean, they're very invasive machines that sat in a box on the top of your TV. They tracked your listening habits, your viewing habits. They tracked what products you brought into the house. They knew what you purchased. They were connected to your credit card And people did this because they were paid, I don't know, $50 a month for doing it. They tracked your conversation. They tape-recorded your talk. They had a camera that watched as you were watching the television news. When the important stories were coming out, Mom was in the kitchen, walking around getting dinner ready. The baby was in the baby seat a few feet away. It didn't matter how critical the news was, Mom only looked up at the television news when a story was on, maybe once or twice during the story. In the meantime, she was putting milk in the bottle for the baby, she was preparing dinner, she was putting clothing away in the closet, she was not watching what was going on. This has an impact on all of us as people trying to communicate to other homeowners, advocates across the country. The attention span, whether it's on television, on the radio, on the computer, is very short. And one of the problems is what I'm doing right now, and that's blabbing on instead of coming out with a very succinct paragraph here about the short attention span of Americans and how we can better communicate our story with them. And that is, keep it short, keep it snappy, and same thing with legislators. Legislators have no time whatsoever for voters. Nyla Ridings of Kansas would be a good one to talk about this, because she successfully got past one of the rare pieces of legislation in our favor anywhere in the country, in Kansas. And she was able to do that by communicating, and communicating well. And she's not even a broadcaster, a professional broadcaster or speaker, but she knew these lessons from her previous occupations, and she was able to perform miracles in Kansas. Same kind of miracles we need to perform in every state.
Oh, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But what does that say about us in terms of being dumbed down?
No, I think we're getting smarter. I think the Internet is helping us get smarter. It's just that we have so much going on in our lives. You don't just have an occupation anymore. You have many occupations. We have lower employment in this country than ever. Too many people out of work, but the rest of us are being paid less. Therefore, we have to take different jobs, separate jobs, and just to make a living for our families. So our time is very limited. We're not getting stupider, though, or dumber. We're getting smarter, but at the same time, we're working harder.
But when you said when these tests were done, it was back in the 70s, right?
That and was when KIRO, Cairo TV, first became a Frank Maggot affiliate. And that was in the 70s, yes.
That was in the 70s, but now you're looking at the 2015. And you're talking about the economic situation today.
Right.
Versus what was happening, 45 years ago?
Well, no, remember in the 70s we were going through the gas embargo, the farmers' strike. There was a whole lot of stuff going on in the 70s that we can't even think about. I mean, the nation goes through crises. It always will. But right now we've got a crisis in communication. We need to work smarter and work better at communicating with people that we're trying to get our message to. I think we can do it. I think we've got a lot of brains in our network.
We do have a lot of brains. I want to go back to talking a little bit about how we get our message out in sound bites, because sometimes I think that with sound bites we don't give the whole picture.
Well, we never do.
We never do.
And let me, if you don't mind, Shu.
Go, please.
I've been in the media business for 40 years,
yes.
Or actually longer. I frequently have people on Neighbors of War that say, I'm going to be interviewed. What do I do? The first thing you do is you realize that when the TV reporter knocks on your door, that TV reporter has 120 seconds to get his story on the air, to condense the story. So you're complaining about your homeowners association in Florida, and there's some big scandal going on there. When the TV reporter comes to interview you, he's got to break down that 2 minutes into certain segments. You get 10 to 15 seconds to get your message across to the TV reporter. That's it. You get one sound bite, because that TV reporter has to take your sound bite and go over to CAI or the HOA manager or a board member, and that board member is going to get 15 seconds. Now, the TV reporter has to allot 10 to 15 seconds to the anchor to introduce the story. He's also got to allot 10 to 15 seconds to the anchor at the end to make whatever cutesy comments he wants to make. Thanks for reporting, Maria. Thank you so much. You look great out there with that microphone and that wind, that kind of stuff. So now you've lost anywhere from 30 to 45 seconds out of your two-minute story. You get 15 seconds, CAI gets 15 seconds, and the remaining 30 seconds, the reporter has to do the setup for the story. Now, that's not a lot of time to get your message out, and people are devastated when they're interviewed by a TV reporter because so little of the good stuff they said got on the air. But the point is, when you've got something to tell this reporter, tell them first, tell them fast, because you're going to get edited. You're going to be written, 99% of what you say is going to be written out of the TV story. But still, television news is one of the most powerful media out there in terms of communicating your story with people. But it's just learning, us learning, what television reporters and producers and editors do before you're allowed to get on the air.
How do you get a TV's attention? There's so many people with so many stories out there who really need to get on the air. They need to get their stories out there. How would you recommend that they get attention from local TV stations and
Find a reporter and annoy the hell out of him. Write him, call him, condense what you have to a half a paragraph, and make sure that he is hammered with your letters, your phone calls. If you have sources, send the telephone numbers, email addresses. In other words, write the story for the reporter, keeping in mind your two-minute limit. Make it easy for him because he may have to pick up two or three or four stories that same day. The easiest story is the one that he's going to talk about in the morning meeting, and it's the story that he's going to get assigned. Make it as easy as possible for him. Let him know who the people are, even people on the other side who can be interviewed, what their phone numbers are, and just condense that story down to skeletal proportions. Make it sensational, but reduce the text. And if we all do that individually when we're trying to explain to our friends in the living room what a story is, that's what you need to communicate to the TV reporter. Or the radio reporter. Radio is the same way, the radio reporter. Newspaper reporters have a little more flexibility, but they also have less time during the course of a day because they don't have just two or four stories. They have 20 stories they've got to work on.
Wow. That's a lot of stories.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, it's TV reporting or newspaper reporting is really, I call it a 24-hour day. I've worked many, many consecutive 24-hour days.
Well, one of the things I like about doing my show is that we do have the flexibility and we do have the time to get into the details, and that's what I find quite often is missing. Mm-hmm. I was on your Neighbors at War, and I was watching looking at some of the stories, and one of the ones that caught my eye was the City Council out of Hopkins, Minnesota. I don't know if you remember that. It was a video.
My memory, Shu, at age 66, is gone.
Some woman was asking about HOAs and went through every single city council member, and they didn't know what an HOA was.
Exactly, except to one man, one councilman, who said, if you get into an HOA, then I have no sympathy for you.
Right.
Get what you deserve.
Right. That's exactly the point I was trying to make. You have these these legislators, these elected officials who, A, don't know what's going on,
right,
and B, if they do, they have absolutely zero sympathy. How do you put them in your shoes? I don't know what Hopkins, Minnesota is like. I know that Fairfax, Virginia, the estimate is that over 90% of all housing is in an HOA. Over 90%.
You'll find the same thing in Arizona, in Scottsdale, in Phoenix, in Tucson, in Denver. You wouldn't believe the number of people in Colorado who can no longer live outside of HOAs.
Yes.
It's going on everywhere. Florida, South Florida. You want to move to the south and have a view of the ocean, you're going to be in an HOA.
Yeah.
You may be able to move to a swamp in the panhandle and not be in one, but I don't even know about that anymore.
Well, I think what they're doing here is the older developments where you don't have HOAs, they're just rezoning them and getting rid of them so that everything is in an HOA and you're packed in really tight.
Yeah. Well, that is the new model. You know, as our country continues to grow in population, city officials are desperate to get additional resources. And HOAs are resources, hidden resources.
Yeah.
Because they handle their own zoning, they handle their own lawsuits, they improve their own streets, if they ever do improve their own streets. They plow their own snow, they pick up their own garbage. All of those are services that they're taxed for, but the city doesn't have to pay for because these idiotic homeowners have moved into HOAs and they're being double taxed.
Oh, that's not the half of it. I mean, there's so many other ways that the city and the county benefits by these HOAs that most homeowners don't know about. I mean, they're just constantly paying and paying and paying and paying, and they're getting very, very little in return. But it's not so much, I mean, that's one problem. That's one issue. It's dollars and cents, and you can quantify that.
Right.
It's the human toll, and it's the quality of life issues that you're not going to be able to tell in sound bites. What is it like to come home terrified of checking the mail, terrified of answering the door, terrified of answering the phone, terrified of what your neighbor's doing, watching people drive past your house, slowing down, watching people sit in front of your house with cameras, just, you know, what does it feel like? That's something that you can't get out in a soundbite.
I disagree.
Really?
I really disagree, yes. We all have access to cameras now. I have security cameras on my house. My security cameras were used in a court case a number of years ago where people from the adjacent HOA were intentionally trying to destroy my road.
They put a fence down the middle of your road.
Right down the middle of my road, which has been there since 1859. But just a little bit of videotape made its way into court. Maybe 30 seconds. I could have put 5 seconds of that into a television news story, had we done a television news story. And that 5 seconds would have made a tremendous impact. That kind of security technology is available at your local Walmart. You can buy security cameras and set them up. There's nothing wrong. I mean, the cities are all doing it on intersections now, and they're solving a tremendous amount of crime just by videotaping what goes on. We can do the same thing in our homes. If you see that kind of nonsense going on with your idiotic neighbors, videotape it. Provide that videotape to the news reporter who's doing your TV story. He throws that up on the air, and it's a very powerful statement about the harassment that many of us get. You can do it.
I'm thinking more in terms of how do we get legislators to understand when they enact legislation that sets up the homeowner for this kind of abuse and harassment. What's it like having to live in one of these gulags for the...
Well, again, you know, if we have that mindset that I do on our website, your reading time for this report, 1 minute, 35 seconds, if you can live with that mindset and put together your own story with that mindset, remember that legislator has just a short attention span as any typical television viewer. So if you can play a videotape for him that's a minute 30 to 2 minutes of what's going on, and if he has half a dozen different people who approach him and say, I've got this two-minute video I'd like you to look at, all of a sudden that's a tremendous amount of influence on this legislator to begin thinking there might be a big problem here that we need to start addressing. But all of that comes through rapid communication, not these long-winded one-hour, two-hour presentations that we all tend to want to put on.
I know there's a lot of stream of consciousness that goes on, a lot of name-calling. None of that helps.
It doesn't help, no.
No, and in fact, it turns people off, frankly.
Absolutely.
So I agree with you. So the idea is to come up with the soundbite that you think is going to get the most attention.
Or the phone call. If you can't say it in 2 minutes or less, you're saying nothing. You may as well not communicate. It's just the way we think these days. And it's not depressing. You know, on one hand, it might seem tragic that we have to do that. On the other hand, we have so much coming into our minds during the course of the day, from the television, from internet, from friends, from newscasts, from what we hear going back and forth to work on the radio. We're getting smarter, but we're thinking in terms of sound bites, television news. That's the way our brains are wired. And that's what we as homeowner advocates, homeowners' rights advocates, have to learn to do and do better. If we do it better than CAI and Associa and some of the other organizations against homeowners around the country, if we do it better than them, then we'll get more attention than them. Right now, they're hiring people like me to teach them how to put together two-minute stories.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. That's number one step in trying to communicate is figure out who's doing all the communicating, hire them to teach you how to do this.
Well, I know. I think I read someplace that said...
I won't work for them, Shu. I promise. I'll never work for them.
Oh, I would in a heartbeat. I would work for them, and I'd revamp the whole program in lickety-split.
Okay. I love it.
Lickety-split. It would all be gone. None of this nonsense about all of the garbage that they put out.
Sadly, Shu, you'd be one of the first fired.
And I'd wear that as a badge of honor.
Yes. I'd wear it as a big red A on my shirt.
I would wear that as a badge of honor. But no, because I do argue with them. I mean, I argue with some of them sometimes.
I had a fun argument with one of them. I was at an author's conference here several months ago. And a very pretty young lady walked up to me and said, "I know all about you." And I said, "Oh, I'm Ward Lucas. Good to meet you. I know just who you are." And I said, "Oh, I just wrote a book. That's why." And she said, "I've read your book." And I said, "Oh, what you think?" She said, "I think you're a fool. I think you're stupid. I think you're..." And I said, "Oh, okay." And, you know, several, maybe half a dozen people had gathered around as she was haranguing me. And I said, "Who do you work for?" And she said, "I'm the publicity person in Colorado for CAI.
Oh.
And I said, "Oh, well, you and I need to have lunch." And she was haranguing me further. And suddenly, people who had gathered in our circle, three or four different people, began haranguing her. Because they said, "I know what HOAs are all about. I know what CAI is. I know what you guys are doing to homeowners and blah, blah, blah." I shut my mouth for the next half hour and just listened in awe as these other authors began hammering on this woman.
That's interesting.
It was very entertaining.
That's interesting. It's interesting because when Evan McKenzie's book first came out, Privatopia first came out, it was the first book written by an advocate or someone who's not on the CAI side of the fence. And CAI went absolutely nuts. Of course, remember, this went back to the, you know, last...
1992, yeah.
Yeah. So CAI said, "Nobody buy it. Nobody buy the book. We'll buy one copy and we'll share it."
You know what I did? I bought 100 copies of his book and sent them out to the legislature.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, I did. I've had a lifelong habit. I get some really weird habits going. I've made a lifelong habit of making notes of every book that I saw on a boss's or a supervisor's desk and then going out and buying the book. One of the first I ever did that to was with, what is the name of that book? It was a motivational book. Basically for commercial realtors. And I thought, why is the boss reading that book? Well, I read it, and it was a phenomenal book about how to communicate with employees. And I thought, oh, okay. So I learned what the boss was reading, and I could mold my behavior around what I thought he was expecting from me because I'd read the book. And I remember my photographer was reading a book called Privatopia. I got in the van, and there was a book he checked out from the library, and I thought, Privatopia, what's that about? And so I promptly went home and bought, we didn't have Amazon then, but I got a copy of Privatopia and suddenly understood what I was dealing with. Because I've been dealing with my HOA back to the 1980s when I first bought my property. But if you see books being read by influential people, buy the book. Find out what they're reading and what they're thinking. Get ahead of the mindset. Be smarter than the people you're opposed to. But, yeah, Evan McKenzie was my inspiration. I probably read his book six times. I had kind of close to being memorized, but I didn't know that people could write books with that much information that impacted me, that hit me right in the heart. But that's what he did for me. I've never spoken to him. I've never written to him. But he changed this person sitting in this chair right here.
Why he came to Washington? Because CAI invited him to come and speak at their conference.
Wow.
And so the Maryland Homeowners Association, which is one of the oldest groups, advocacy groups in the country that I know of, and they had contacted him, and since CAI paid his fare out here, they had him over for a meeting. So I met him then, and I had a copy of his, a hardback. You can't get them, and he signed it for me then. And so my relationship basically with Evan goes back to when Privatopia first came out, and he came out to Washington, and I met him there.
I would love to meet him.
He's a really nice guy.
I'm sure he is.
He's a really nice guy. I have him on the show periodically, not as often as I would like, but he does come on.
Well, he was the first and the best, and I don't know if he's a million seller, but he got 100 purchases from me, and the entire legislature got his book. They didn't read it. But
that's the sad part, is that they don't read it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, the other side came out with a whole slew of books talking about how wonderful HOAs were. And those are out there as well. And I have some of them.
Well, you know, it's pure propaganda. I go back to the... my father was a prisoner of war of the Nazis in 1945. And I've been doing a lot of YouTubing on various World War II documentaries and going back and trying to see what my father went through and what the people went through in Germany. And the amount of propaganda that came out, the books that were burned, the mines that were polluted with the kind of stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
That happens in this country. That happens in this particular industry. We're dealing with misinformation, malinformation, if there's such a word.
Now there is.
From the other side, and it's only when people get burned in homeowners associations and start hiring lawyers and start trying to defend themselves that they realize this is a dangerous, dangerous institution. It's as un-American as any institution we have ever dealt with in this country. Homeowners associations, they make the rules up as they go. They don't give you constitutional due process. They don't follow the laws that were created to keep us a free people. With HOAs growing the way they are in this country, we are throwing away our fundamental freedoms. I don't usually get up on the pulpit this loud and long, but you're letting me, so I'm going to take every advantage I can.
Go ahead. You got more than 2 minutes.
I've done my 2 minutes. But we're losing freedoms that we grew up in school being taught that we supposedly had.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have those freedoms now. We sign them away on that real estate deed. So what we need is some sort of revival, some Billy Graham revival, where we go back and reclaim our freedoms and vow to teach our children to never, ever make the mistakes that we did. And you make that mistake with your home, the thing that's closest to your heart is home and hearth. We make that mistake with our homes because we don't know. We haven't educated ourselves. We haven't heard those two-minute stories. We have no idea what we're getting into. We get into it, we suddenly realize we can't get out. This is quicksand. And that's the HOA landscape today, is a landscape of quicksand that people can't get out. Those people that say, no, homeowners associations are great, I love mine. Just wait. Wait till the first lawsuit when a kid falls to the entrance to the community and sues and wins $10 million or $18 million. And you're hit with a special assessment to pay that $18 million. You may only have $1 million worth of insurance, liability insurance, but somewhere you've got to make up that $17 million. And in a community like mine of only 200 homes, that's a huge special assessment that will essentially bankrupt every person in the Homeowners Association. And you saw that happen in that lawsuit in Northern Virginia, where the entire HOA was bankrupted.
Yeah, and it's a real community now. And I love it. I use that. I talk about that all the time.
Yeah,
it's a great, great example of how HOAs are not protecting your property values.
Exactly.
And how HOAs actually kill community because it was a true war zone beforehand.
They pit neighbor against neighbor. It's what they do for a living.
And that's what they did with the Ferrans.
Yep.
But because trying to get the whole thing extinguished, the actual HOA extinguished, was too difficult, what they did was they rewrote the governing documents and they gutted the powers of the HOA. The HOA exists. The only thing they're allowed to do is collect funds to maintain a one-acre strip of land and pay the insurance. So last year when it snowed and they didn't have, you know, they didn't have anything in place to remove the snow. So some guy went and hired a plow who came through and plowed the streets. And then he went around with a hat and he said, I paid out of my own pocket. Would you like to contribute? And everybody reached into their pockets and their wallets and they pulled out $20, $30, $40, $50, whatever it was.
And there's a word for all of that, Sue. It's called community.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And so they did that and then they had a party.
That's fantastic.
And then they had a party and people sent... You know, when somebody does something and goes and helps the neighbor then sends them a basket with cookies or fruit or wine and cheese, and they get together and they have a party. So the actual development, the neighborhood has become a community.
Fantastic.
It has become a community.
I was worried about them because of that lawsuit and the collapse of the community. I'm glad to see them come back.
Oh, but you know, here's something else. Because the board, before you had all these covenants and restrictions and you couldn't do this and you couldn't do that and you had to go to the Architectural Control Committee for permission to repair your roof that was leaking because it was 60 years old or however old it was. And they wouldn't give it to you because they said that you did not, we're not using the identical roof tiles, which are no longer made. So people's houses were just deteriorating. They didn't want people having decks because they didn't want people sitting out and overlooking each other. So they denied all of that stuff. And once the covenants, once the whole thing was gutted, homeowners replaced their roofs, they added decks, they added, did all kinds of improvements, and guess what happened, Ward?
The word community came into play.
Not only that, but property values went up.
Yes.
You know, your two-minute soundbite from CAI, we protect property values?
Right down the tubes.
Right down the tubes. That's a good two-minute one right there. And no, they don't protect property values. So that's a great story, but you can't tell that in 2 minutes.
Yeah,
because there's a little more to it.
Challenge me. true. I've written eerie stories my whole life.
Go ahead. 2 minutes.
I can do it. No.
I'm timing you. You've got 2 minutes to tell that story.
Let me take a wild turn here, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
You and I talked yesterday very briefly about this, but I saw a movie yesterday that just really hit me very hard. Again, it was a World War II movie. And let me set this up by saying that we have a lot of people in our group who came here because of abuse. They were being abused. They were being emotionally and financially ruined. And that's why you have Gary Solomon on, mm-hmm. Dr. Solomon, the fantastic psychologist in the Southwest. People who get abused the way people are in this homeowners association movement have sort of a prisoner of war mentality. There's no question they're psychologically and emotionally damaged, no question at all. When you're afraid of your neighbors, when you're afraid of the local HOA board, when you have that kind of fear, it changes your life. The movie I saw just before you called me yesterday was called Unbroken. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't, but it's on my list.
It was directed by Angelina Jolie. Now, she's kind of a joke in Hollywood. She is mocked because of her lack of directorial skills. But she was the director of Unbroken, and it was a phenomenal movie. I'm going to go back and watch it again, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But it tells the story of a kid named Louis Zamperini, who grew up in Torrance, California. He was an Italian kid. His family came over here, not able to speak any English at all. So this kid grew up in an Anglo neighborhood, just barely speaking English, was beaten up, was brutalized by other kids. He grew up as a fighter, a little short kid. He grew up as a runner. He started breaking high school and college records in running. He was so fast that he was, I think at age 17, put into the Olympics, the 1936 Olympics. He didn't win, but he did run the 5,000 meter, and the last lap was the fastest ever run in history. A little short kid. He was scheduled to go to Tokyo for the 1940 Olympics. Obviously, we were at war with Japan, and the Olympics were canceled. But he ended up being a prisoner of war. He was in a plane that crashed in the Pacific, about 850 miles south of Hawaii, drifted in a life raft for 47 days. He and another airman survived 47 days in this life raft, were finally picked up by the Japanese, and he was taken to Tokyo and became a prisoner of war. Brutally beaten day after day after day because of his Olympic status by this one guard, beaten to the point that he was almost killed on multiple occasions, just tortured. He came out of this experience in World War II with a tremendous amount of anger, tremendous amount of psychological damage, ended up becoming an alcoholic, abusing his own wife, but he at some point was able to change his mental attitude about this torture that he had endured. He forgave his tormentor. He turned his life around. He actually became a minister, a pastor, and began having an enormous impact on people around him, on how to survive these horrible situations that people go through. This fellow never got to run in the Tokyo Olympics, but at the age of 80, he ran. He carried a torch in Tokyo.
Oh, really?
Unbelievable story. Incredible story of recovery from nasty situations, and not only survival, but changing your life and the lives of all of those around you for the better. So no matter what people are going through in their personal situations, there is hope. And that's the one thing that I think we're not communicating well enough. I do think Gary Solomon does a pretty good job of it. You can recover from these situations. You don't have to be psychologically abused. You can make yourself stronger. I play the guitar, and I used to love talking about the fact that when you first learn the guitar, which I did at age, 14, 15, you don't get any sound out of the guitar. it's not until you get calluses on the tips of your fingers that suddenly the strings start playing and you start making music. And calluses on our hearts are just as important as long as you use them correctly. Use them correctly to not only grow yourself personally, but grow yourself out of the terror, the horror that you're going through right now in your homeowners association or your lawsuits or whatever, and make you a better person. And then go out to other people. Spread the message that there is hope. There's friendship. You're going to survive this situation. You'll survive it faster and better and healthier if you have a positive attitude. Maintain that attitude. And that's the one thing that people in our movement really need to get a hold of. The fact that it's okay. Just work with it. You're going to come out a better person and make your neighbors better people.
I think the best revenge is to live well and to
yes.
not let that get you down.
Absolutely.
I met the doctor, became friends with a doctor, and I'm going to be talking to him. He's trying to set up something on how laughter is healing.
Mm-hmm. The best medicine.
And, yeah, it goes back to laughter being the best medicine. So we're going to work on a program together that we'll be bringing at some point, probably not for another month or two,
mm-hmm.
on how to use laughter to heal. Now, when I first got involved in all of this, I made friends with Frank Short. And Frank and I used to, Frank's terrific, but we used to go around with flyers just mocking everything and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun. For instance, they went around, the association went around and put out little yard signs everywhere. Do not place trash here. Violators will be maybe fined. So in the middle of the night, Frank and I went out with 8x10 sheets of paper that said things like, eat your vegetables. No fishing. Do your homework. All of this, and we took a huge bottle of glue, and between the two of us, we went around and we just plastered the backs of these 8x10 sheets of paper, stuck them to the top of these little yard signs, and in the morning, bright and early, we went out and we're walking around, and people were coming out, getting their papers with cups of coffee in their hands, rubbing the sleep out of their eyes, looking at these yard signs that said, eat your vegetables, violators may be fine. And everybody was just laughing. Everybody except the association.
Of course. Well, it's like that lady in Texas who put up the T-Rex sculptures in
the
yard.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I hear from people in Texas who say, I'm sitting on my porch and I see these trucks drive by with these T-Rexes on the back of them. So what she did was she let people use them, have them for 3 days.
Yeah, because, I mean, she was being threatened with fines because she had this T-Rex in her yard. So all the neighbors said, well, I'll take it for 3 days. And they just move it around continually, so the HOA doesn't know who to fine and sue.
But the thing was, they couldn't track it down. But the thing was, anybody who wanted them had to pay, had to donate $50 to the charity of their choice.
I would do that in a second for a T-Rex.
And so they turned this around and made it something really great.
That's great. They raised
a lot of money for a lot of charities. And the T-Rexes moved around. They're back home now, but the T-Rexes moved around. The dinosaurs just did a walkabout, not necessarily only in her community, but they went all over the place.
That's great.
And so, yeah, so there are ways of dealing with things. Just have fun with it.
But have fun with it, and you're going to come out of the other side a little psychologically better off than you would have otherwise.
So we're going to put together a program on this, and I'm hoping that we will be able to, you know,
great.
Bring
on that subject, Shu, would you let me do something really radical?
Yes.
You always interview me. Can I interview you for a few seconds?
Sure.
And you'll see the point as I get into it. But are you involved with any speaking groups like Toastmasters or Kiwanis or any of the other?
Oh, yeah, I'm a Toastmaster, and I have been for a long time.
What is Toastmasters all about?
Toastmasters is about communication and leadership. And I joined Toastmasters after I started this radio show, or right before I started this radio show, because I did another show. And people would call me up and say I mumbled and I had too many ahs and ums. So I joined Toastmasters, and they kept telling me I should do this and do that and do the other. What happened was I grew so much in my speaking skills, my communication skills, and also my leadership skills.
Specifically, how do they teach you those skills?
It's self-paced, and it's by speaking. You go in.
That's open-ended. Give me more specifics. How long do you speak? How often do you speak? What do you speak about? How do you know what to speak about?
There are manuals, and each manual has a number of speeches in them. And you have projects. It's a project. So let's take the basic manual, the first one, the Competent Communicator. There are 10 projects in there, and it'll give you the skills, the basic skills you need to speak.
So you learn to put humor into your speech?
You learn how to put humor. You learn how to use body language. You learn how to use your voice. You learn how to organize your speech. You learn how to do all sorts. You learn how to inspire people. You learn how to do all sorts of things.
Now, is this hands-on training where you learn this by giving speeches to your group?
Yes, and getting evaluations. And so there are three parts to the whole meeting. You give speeches. Some of them are prepared speeches. So you'll have a 5 to 7 minute speech, and everything is timed. You will get feedback. Somebody will tell you what they liked about the speech, what worked really well. They will give you ideas on how to improve the speech, what you did that might not work so well, and how you can improve that. And then quite often you get asked a question, like I've been asked a question right now, and you have to speak off the cuff. I did not prepare for this. So the idea is that you are prepared and taught how to think on your feet.
So have you turned this into any kind of a speaking career? Do you do speaking outside of Toastmasters?
I do speaking outside of Toastmasters, yes.
Would you have been prepared for that had you not gone to Toastmasters?
No, absolutely not.
Okay,
turning
this around so it has an impact on our group, the homeowners' rights people, would we benefit by going to an organization like Toastmasters in terms of being able to, at some point in the future, talk to legislators, talk to groups, talk to after-dinner crowds?
I think that anybody would benefit from Toastmasters. It's a life-altering experience, as some people have said. I'm quoting others. Because it teaches you. I mean, it'll give you the 2 minutes that you need. It'll teach you how to sift through all of the extra stuff. It gives you the self-confidence to go out there and speak.
I would be interested in learning more. I've never been a member. My father was. I wonder if you should do a whole show about Toastmasters directed specifically at the kinds of things that we as homeowners need to communicate to our neighborhoods, to our legislators.
I think that would be a fun idea. But I would recommend, go to Toastmasters.org. And on the front page, you'll find something that says find a club.
Mm-hmm.
Plug in your zip code, and it'll pop up with a bunch of clubs that are in your neighborhood. Check and see if they're open or closed, because a lot of corporations, believe it or not, find the value in Toastmasters, so they have started and they will pay for Toastmasters in their organization, so it's not open to the public. But you do have community clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Go visit them.
You know, the reason I headed in this direction, Chu, is kind of a weird one. I was on the professional speaking circuit nationally in the 80s, 90s, and up until 2003. I made sometimes almost as much money doing speeches 2 days a week as I did as a television news anchor.
Yeah.
There's a ton of money in speaking. You have to make a presentation that people are interested in, which means a lot of humor. You can be very politically motivated in such a presentation. In other words, talking about homeowners associations. But you've got to be entertaining. And I've never spoken about HOAs, obviously, because I was not involved in your movement until just a few years ago when I started writing my book. But in one of the authors' conferences that I went to after Neighbors at War came out, some man came up to me and he said, "Do you believe in free speech?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, that anybody in the speaking business knows what that means. Or if somebody calls and says, "Do you believe in the First Amendment?" You know, you're going to get the free speech thing coming at you. Yes, I made a lot of money in doing my stupid talk years and years ago, after dinner talk. But this man came up to me at the author's conference and he said, "You ought to be doing presentations for the Kiwanis Club." And he mentioned a couple of other service clubs that are well known. And I said, "Well, I don't do free speech." And he said, "That's not the point. The point is, if you are well known on the Kiwanis Club circuit, corporations watch these Kiwanis Clubs to see who's a good speaker, who is motivated, who has a subject that needs to be spread around to all the people, you know, in our HOA group. And the corporations are willing to pay big money to get you to come speak to their group about whatever the concern is that you are able to properly present. There is a whole new way to reach people and get paid for doing it. If we play our cards right, if we get the proper education, if we realize that there are people out there that need to hear our message, but we'll pay you, we'll buy your plane ticket. And it's a circuit that I think we should start thinking about in terms of a resource. Believe me, CAI speakers, when they go around the country, they get paid some big money, $500, $7,500 for a one-hour talk. They're doing it. Why aren't we?
Because I think one of the things we need to do is make sure that our people understand what a good speech is and understand what an entertaining speech is.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
How to insert a lot of humor in there.
That's the key.
It takes a lot of work to put together a good speech. It takes a lot of work to come up with it, organize it, get it down pat. And I'm not talking about memorizing it because
never
memorize a speech.
Right, but we've got the experts in our group.
We
just haven't put it together in just the right order yet to be able to get the message out. Our two-minute sound bites, our 10-second sound bites, our half-hour after-dinner presentation. CAI is doing it, Associa is doing it, so can we. There's no reason that should be a hurdle for any one of us.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
I love the idea.
I do too. But anyway, I would highly recommend that you check out Toastmasters. Just go and call them up if there's contact information.
Mm-hmm.
Or an email, you can send them an email and make sure that they're meeting that night. And just go in, sit down, and watch what they do. Each club is going to be a little bit different. Each club's going to have their own club culture.
Mm-hmm.
So find something that's a good fit for you.
And you give one good talk at a Kiwanis Club, you're going to be giving 100 to different clubs. The word gets out there fast. And we're a group of people who need to get a little more organized. And we're going to be featured speakers about our neighborhood situations all over our state or all over our region. And it's going to happen very quickly. But you're right. Getting ourselves organized, trained, is key to us being able to be better communicators. And that's probably what we need more than anything else is communication, good communication.
So join Toastmasters. It's self-paced,
mm-hmm.
and it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
It's $6 a month to Toastmasters International, $72 a year.
Wow.
And you may have club dues as well, and you have to buy your books.
Well, you may have motivated me right here.
Go. I would highly recommend it. I went in with the idea of maybe sticking around for a while. They gave me my first book, 10 Speeches. I could not see myself getting to the end of that book. I have done it I don't know how many times. I have gone up. I'm working on my third Distinguished Toastmaster, which is the highest level you can get. And you know, that's it. It's a lot of work to get there, but I've got two of them, and I'm almost at number three.
So there's a lot of speech. Up the subject of books, do you mind a little self-promotion here?
Go for it.
I've got another book coming out in about 2 weeks.
It has nothing
to do with homeowners associations. It's totally off the subject, but it's very funny. It actually was edited by two people whose names you will know very well because you've talked to both of them before. They did a wonderful job helping me edit this thing, and it's just frivolous. It's sort of a personal memoir about growing up as an Army brat, which I did. I'm Japanese by birth. A lot of people don't know that. But my father, after being a POW, was given the reward of being appointed the military governor of Honshu Province, Shiga Prefecture in Japan. And I happened to come along back in 1948, so I had dual citizenship up until I was required to give up Japanese citizenship so I could get a C license. But at any rate, the book will be coming out shortly. It's fun. It's a fun read, but it's very inspirational, too. It has a purpose. It all aims an arrow at a miraculous event that happened as my mother was dying.
I can't wait. What's it called?
It's called Get This Mother Published, The Wacky World of a Recovering Army Brat Family.
I love it. I can't wait to read it.
It's fun. It is. But you'll be inspired, I think, at the end. But
great.
At any rate, again, it has nothing to do with HOAs. It's just you give me a moment to promote myself, and I'm going to take advantage of it.
I'm glad. But we are out of time. And Ward, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're fun to talk to. I love it.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Shu. Thanks.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.